More of Lake Effect Now on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Tyke. When the Secret Sisters, Laura and Lydia Rogers, joined us for an interview in the Lake Effect studio 3 years ago, they promised to come back someday and play for us. And that's just what they did recently, following their release of their new album, Put Your Needle Down. Where their first album was done with a conspicuously retro feel, the new release takes their distinctive harmonies and casts them over a variety of different styles, from country to swamp rock to R&B. But like their previous effort, this one featured the steady producing hand of the legendary T-Bone Burnett. We'll chat with them in just a few minutes, but let's listen to them play now in Studio C1. This is an original tune called I Cannot Find a Way. I Cannot Find a Way, the Secret Sisters, Laura and Lydia Rogers. Thank you so much. Welcome back to Milwaukee.
Thank you. We're glad to be back.
So good to be here.
The last time we spoke, it was about 3.5 years ago, and you were about to go on a tour of Australia, I think it was, with Brandi Carlile.
That was a very long time ago. I didn't realize it was that long ago since we've been here, but... we were hesitant about that tour. We were really homesick at the time and still trying to adjust to what it meant to be, you know, touring full-time musicians. And we were really apprehensive about flying so far away from home. But once we got to Australia, it was fantastic. And now we're kind of itching to go back down there and do some stuff. So.
Well, and apparently it went well enough that Brandi Carlile wrote the first song on the new album.
She definitely contributed a lot to this record. We became friends with her kind of by accident. And, of course, we'd always been longtime fans of hers. But then we happened to go on a tour with her, and it turned into a actual friendship and a real camaraderie and a real kind of similar musical place. And so she became not only our friend, but kind of a big sister to us. And so she co-wrote several of the songs on the record. And then, of course, Rattle My Bones was a Brandi tune that they had never cut before. So, yeah, there's a whole lot of Brandi on this record, and we like that.
Yeah,
for
we're
sure.
thankful for it.
Do you feel, is that like a pivotal moment in your career when you go from being a fan of these people to meeting them to actually being a peer of theirs?
Absolutely. Yeah. You kind of have to fake it when you're with them. You have to pretend like you're on the same level as them. But it was really weird. Laura and I used to go to Brandi's shows all the time, and we would stand outside of her bus. This is embarrassing. We would stand outside of her bus just to meet her and talk to her. And then we went on tour with her, you know, a year later. So it's just so strange how
And we've
how
had so many, so many of those moments, not only with Brandi, but with other people that we admire and know so much about, you know, their music or their work. And it is tricky to try to, like, not have that fangirl moment, but we still have them. I mean, we are still so blown away by, you know, certain artists and a lot of different artists, too.
Mm-hmm.
There's actually a possibility that we might get to meet Dawn Everly in the next few months, and I probably will collapse. I'm just, you'll read about it in the newspaper.
You'll just shrivel up.
The Secret Sisters just die because they get to meet the last Everly brother.
On the other hand, it'd be kind of a bummer if you weren't in wonder when you had those moments.
That's true. We just feel so, I hope it doesn't come across as, you know, odd, but we both, I think, still feel very unworthy of the place that we've been given and the relationships that have kind of come into our world. And so, you know, being around those kind of people, especially those who have influenced our music and the music of so many others, you know, much more successful and better known than us, is pretty, that's a moment that you need to revere.
There's that term they use called imposter syndrome, that somebody's going to find out that I'm not really qualified to do this.
Yeah, I think that we suffer from that a lot. Every now and then I do. When we play shows, I'm like, oh no, something's going to happen and they're going to figure out that we're not really that good and that we don't know what we're doing.
Daily struggles.
Yeah.
No chance. The first album, you know, really harkened back to this earlier era in a lot of ways. It was recorded on period instruments and using period recording equipment. How much of this new album is about moving forward from that point?
Oh, it's so much of that. I think we will always naturally kind of sound like an older time just in our voices. That kind of harmony that we do just sounds like an older time. But we're always wanting to do new things, and especially with this record, we wanted to show off that we can write a few songs ourselves, and we didn't want to box ourselves in any way. And I feel like we were starting to do that with the first record. If we had continued down that same path, I think that we would have been we would have stayed in that genre forever. So I'm thankful.
People might have seen you as a novelty act.
Right, absolutely.
It's very easy to make a cover record. You know, it isn't hard to find great songs and do a good version of them. That isn't hard to do. And I think we could have done that. And I think it would have been good. And I think that people would have liked it. Just because I know we would have been careful about what we chose. But we knew that if not for everybody else's sake, for our own sake as artists and songwriters, that we needed to move forward a little bit while still paying tribute to all the people that, you know, have inspired us. And, you know, what I love about the record is that there is kind of a fresh newness to it, but we did record it in the same way. We used the old instruments and the old microphones, and we recorded everything to a tape machine, and we kind of used these old recording techniques, but we tried to, you know, move forward a little bit and, I guess, modernize ourselves while still showing where our roots are.
I know it's a line from the song The Pocket Knife, but is put the needle down or put your needle down kind of a metaphor for where you see yourselves as a band?
Absolutely. I think that's why we chose the title. It's, you know, our mom's not sewing our clothes anymore. We're trying to move forward and grow up a little bit.
I see you are wearing updated clothes this time around.
Yep, no vintage dresses today. That was a very fun thing to do, and we still love to wear, you know, vintage dresses on stage, and we love to curl our hair and wear the makeup, but we wanted to kind of, I guess, grow up a little bit and get
show
away
people
from
we live
the,
in 2014.
Yeah, that we didn't want to look like we walked out of a magazine from the 1940s. We wanted to look like real girls who are, you know, living now.
So this new album, you can hear the South a lot in this album.
Thank you.
In a lot of dark ways, too. It's sort of like a Faulkner novel in places.
Oh, yes. What a compliment.
But you worked on making sure that there was that sense of place.
Absolutely. We are very proud Southerners, and it's one of those things where you don't realize how proud you are of it until you have to leave it for a certain amount of time. And so we definitely don't apologize for the fact that we're Southern, but we also, you know, don't want to ever perpetuate the myth that Southerners are stupid or backwards or slow or hateful. And so we did try to put, I guess, the respectable, mysterious, and kind of storytelling parts of the South into this record. I've often kind of thought of this record as a Southern Gothic album. Even though some of the songs are more upbeat, there's still kind of a swampy mystery to it.
Personified maybe in the song Iuka.
Yeah.
tell us a little bit about what inspired that one.
We had been listening to a lot of Bobby Gentry at that time. And, you know, she is, if anybody embodies that Southern Gothic sound, it's her. And we were scheduled to do some songwriting with Dan Wilson, who's, he was in the band Semisonic. Famous for Closing Time.
and chemistry.
And a bunch of other stuff. Really, really talented guy. And
not a Southerner.
Not a Southerner at all. So we told him we had been listening to Bobby Gentry a lot, and so we just kind of started writing this song. Our grandparents were actually married in Iuka over 50 years ago, probably 60 years ago.
They're very young.
Yeah, so you had to be over 18 to get married in Alabama. So they went across the state line to get married in Iuka, and we thought that was a really cool story, and then we wanted to murder everyone. So,
and the thing about it is that if you're from our neck of the woods and you know anything about, you know, your family history, when you hear the name Iuka, you may not have a clue where it is, but you know that that's where people ran off to get married. Yep. So we have so many people be like, yes, my parents were married in Iuka in, you know, 1900 whatever. And so it's kind of cool to pay tribute. It's a tiny little town.
Population 2,000.
Yeah, it's like very small. And we just love those spooky, those folklorish kind of tales. But that really is a true story.
Yeah.
A tiny town with a really busy justice of the peace.
Yes, right. Yes, yeah. Right. Exactly.
I'd never tell a man to ask my daddy for my hand. I've got a thousand tales about the temper of that man. He'd shoot a man who came within a mile of my young frame. But I know that you will take the risk so I can take your name. You've got the ring, I've got the keys, and 60 miles ahead, Iuka, Mississippi, where the two of us will wed. Take me down to Iuka, Mississippi, for he knows the two of us have up and gone. Take me down to Iuka, Mississippi, we can run away and never come home, never come home. My daddy finally knocked a little sense right into me. So I asked around until I found a justice of the peace. The bruises on my body can't be hidden anymore. So park your car up on the hill, I'm headed out the door. Step easy so my daddy doesn't hear us sneak away. He'll shoot you down, that's why we just can't stay. Take me down to Iuka, Mississippi, for he knows the two of us have up and gone. Take me down to Iuka, Mississippi, we can run away and never come home. Follow close behind me, not much further now. Oh, it's just a shadow, I didn't hear a sound. Ain't no way he heard us, ain't no way he'll come. I hear someone breathing, hold my hand and run. Somewhere in the river there's a gun that somehow everybody knew that everything was wrong. A noose up in the maple tree, the old man's gonna pay. Two headstones for two lovers who finally got away.
Take me down to Iuka, Mississippi, for he knows the two of us have up and gone. Iuka, Mississippi, we can run away and never come home.
Take me down to Iuka, Mississippi, for he knows the two of us have up and gone. Take me down to Iuka, Mississippi, we can run away and never come home. Never come home. Never come home.
Secret Sisters and Iuka. I have goosebumps.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks. It's the first time we've ever done that acoustically.
Well, it sounded great.
Thank you.
And Milwaukee feels a little swampier right now.
Yeah.
How did your work with T-Bone on this album compare to how you worked with him the first time around?
Oh, man. It was a whole
different
process. On the first record, the record was actually produced by a fantastic producer named Dave Cobb, who's done a lot of incredible work the past couple years, more than the past couple years, honestly. But then after the record was was kind of, you know, done pretty much. T-Bone jumped on board to kind of help with the, I guess, sequencing of the record and the mixing and mastering, and to just kind of present it to the world, because we needed that kind of platform because we were so unknown at the time. Mm-hmm. But with this record, he came in and, you know, we basically just handed him over a portfolio of songs that were still really rough around the edges, but we kind of laid out to him how we wanted it to go and what we were hoping to accomplish through the record. And so we went into the studio, and basically he just kind of put us in this room with these amazing musicians, and of course he was there with his engineers, and it was just a magical kind of thing. He wasn't very, like, meticulous. He was very kind of, you know, just kind of hovering around, and not in a suffocating way, but he would just let us kind of do what came naturally, and he would step in when it was necessary. And so I think a lot of T-Bone's talent lies in putting the right people in the same room and being there to capture whatever magic happens in a very good way sonically. And so it was a really neat thing to kind of build an album from the ground up with him, and to hear it, you know, the way that he hears it, and to have his advice and input on things. And I absolutely believe this record wouldn't be even half of what it is without T-Bone. He just contributed so much.
At some level, it must be a comfort going into it knowing that you have somebody like T-Bone Burnett who is overseeing it.
Yeah, definitely. It's like, even if it doesn't do anything, even if only, you know, 10 people hear it, it's still a T-Bone record, you know, and you still have his, this creative moment that you had with arguably one of the best producers in the whole world that will ever be. And so it's a little bit foolproof in a way. I think that you could take the worst band in the world with the worst songs in the world, and T-Bone would find a way to make it cool.
Which is good for us, because we're not cool at all.
T-Bone is a wonderful person, and obviously a wonderful person in the studio. So
it is like the musical Good Housekeeping seal of approval.
Yes, right. Exactly. Right. Exactly. It's nice. We knew we were in capable hands.
So we have to talk about Dirty Lie. How did you happen to be called on to complete what was then an unfinished Bob Dylan song?
Well, we were in the studio almost finished with the whole record, and one day T-Bone walked in there with his computer in his hands, and he was like, "Girls, I have just been sent some unfinished demos from Bob," as he called him, because they're best friends or something.
And we knew who he was talking about.
There was no mistaking which Bob was
there. There are a bunch of Bobs in the world, but we know which one you're talking about.
But he had a lot of unfinished demos from the 80s, and apparently he just gave us permission to finish one or two of them, and we chose one that we were really drawn to and went back to our hotel room that night and finished it and recorded it the next day. That's basically how it went.
Well, and Bob Dylan sought you out to do this?
I don't know if it was so much of a seeking out process. I don't really know if Bob Dylan seeks out people, but it certainly helps to have, you know, reputable connections to him. And I think that, you know, there's a new project that's about to come out that T-Bone also did that has, you know, several really well-known artists who also finished Bob Dylan, you know, unfinished Bob Dylan tracks. So I think it helps to have, you know, the T-Bone gateway that connects you to him. But I do think that, you know, I know for a fact that Bob had heard of us before and had heard us sing before, but I really don't know how, I guess, how much of it was on his part and how much of it was just kind of T-Bone being the orchestrator of really cool collaborations.
This is a lot of pressure, though. This is a guy that, you know, people call the great American songwriter.
Yes.
Right? He just needed our help.
It was easily one of the most daunting things that we've ever tried to accomplish. And for the first little bit when we were writing the song, we were trying to think, like, what was Bob Dylan trying to convey in these, you know, these melodies and these words that have been provided? What was he talking about? And so for a little while, we kind of tried to write from what we thought was his perspective. And you cannot possibly know what he was thinking because his mind is so, you know, vast and incredible. And so finally we were like, you know what, we're just going to have to tell our own story and hope that it'll be okay to match up with whatever Bob had in mind. And the song's really different for us. We've not ever really cut a song that has that kind of bluesy, jazzy quality to it before.
It's the first song we've ever recorded where we didn't use any harmony in the song whatsoever. So that was really new as well.
It was terrifying because when we were recording the song, we finished, you know, our part of it. And then we were like, but T-Bone, we don't know what kind of harmony to do on this song. And in all his wisdom, he said, girls, it doesn't have to have harmony on it. We're like, what? Are you crazy?
We don't know what that means.
We don't know how to not sing harmony. Like, it's not complete. But it was a smart moment, you know, one of those wise T-bone moments that it was methodical and he had thought about it, you know, so.
And you finished it in a day?
It was a very quick, you know, that's what happens when you have great musicians.
I think it was probably 3 a.m. when we were done.
Yeah, and we spent a few hours finishing it. I mean, a lot of the hard stuff had been done already. Dylan had already finished the melody and he had the hook in place. So we just kind of had to tell the story.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and you got to figure that if Bob Dylan had wanted it to sound like Bob Dylan singing it, he would have finished it himself.
Sure. And there was a lot of that kind of speculation of, you know, you got to do your own thing. And if he doesn't like it, you'll find out. And if he doesn't want it on your record, you'll find out about that too. So he never called us and said, don't put it on there. So
have you heard anything about what he thinks?
No feedback.
No, no
and
feedback
we're
whatsoever.
Secretly a little glad about that. I'm terrified to know what he really thinks. I mean, I guess it just goes back to that whole still not really believing that this is our career and still not really believing that we've earned it. And so to be given the privilege of working with him on any level, even on, you know, this kind of separate level, is a pretty big, big responsibility and one that we will never feel that we've, you know, earned it.
Well, from this outsider's perspective, you have certainly earned it.
Oh, thank
thanks.
Laura, Lydia Rogers, thanks so much for dropping by and seeing us once again. And I hope we'll see you back here.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime.
Thanks again.
And what are you going to play us out with?
This is a song that actually is on a special release that we've just put out through Cracker Barrel. It's available at all the Cracker Barrel country stores and at crackerbarrel.com. And we got to put a couple bonus tracks onto this special release. And so this is a previously unreleased song. It's called You've Got It Wrong.
If you think I'm gonna make it fine without you, if you think I'll wake up smiling every day, if you think that I don't miss you or that time will heal my pain, you've got it wrong all over.
The Secret Sisters are Laura and Lydia Rogers. Their new album is called Put Your Needle Down. They stopped by our studio C1 when they were in town recently for a concert at Turner Hall Ballroom. Our interview was engineered by John Strelecki. One last break and then some thoughts on this transitional month we're in. This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio.
If you think that I am careless and will hurt